My name is Harry, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Harry.
I asked Bud if it was okay for me to use some terminology he uses about his wife. He calls his wife his little flower, and outside of my love for my little flower, Mark would be the next person I love more than anybody else in the world. That includes my brothers and anybody else in my family. I love Mark to death, and and some days I probably love him more than my little flowers. So I love Mark, and I could sit up and tell his story, but I'm going to let you tell it. And good luck. Thank you very much.
I'm Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm an Anda. So it's going to be some Anda stuff. And Harry's my spiritual guru, and absolutely gives me my most spiritual growth. I grow a lot around Harry. He probably wants to kill me more than he does wants to kill his wife most days too. Let me see. I was born in Mississippi in a real small town. I think it had like 6 rooms in the hospital. And I and my oldest brother were. And my mother and father were really good people. You know, I've been coming here for quite a few years, and I hear a lot of people say, you know, I really didn't come from a bad family. You know, I didn't have any real reason to drink. Well, I did. I had a shitload of them. Besides being mentally unstable and a few other things, my father was a stone alcoholic and loved to whip our asses. And I mean literally whip our asses. And my mother was an extreme codependent. She chased my father like he chased the booze. And when I was about 10 years old, I contracted spinal meningitis. And my oldest brother saved my life. And when he was about 32 years old, he decided to go to medical school and became a doctor. So I helped him along his way. But I was a wayward child pretty early. You know, of course, coming from an alcoholic family, there wasn't very much money at all. You know, my father would either gamble it up or drink it up. So, you know, we stayed pretty poverty ridden. And my mom worked 2 jobs, and she pretty much paid the bills, and he drank up whatever he earned. A lot of y'all probably know that story. And so probably when I was in about the 5th grade, I lived on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and I became a shrimp hand on a boat. And that's pretty much what I did for the next 5 years. I didn't go to school, and I didn't get much of an education. I'm pretty much illiterate. And that's followed me up until pretty recently now. I just went back to school, and I'm 48 years old. But I started getting in trouble pretty early. I got sent off to boys' camp, Oakley Training Center, is where they're going to train you to be a better child for theft. I like to steal because I didn't have anything, so I thought I could just have what I wanted. You know, I forgot to tell y'all, I am self-centered, self-seeking, and self-serving, absolutely without a doubt. If you've ever experienced anything other than that from me, then you've experienced the vision of God working in somebody's life. Because that's what I am. And when I got out of the training center, of course, DFACS is not what it's called there, but that's what it was. It entered my life, and they pretty much took me out of my parents' home, and they gave me to a man and woman who didn't have any other children, and my parents had my oldest brother and my middle brother. And both of those guys did real well in life. I mean, they were both very athletic. They did Boy Scouts. They did the whole thing, and I didn't do any of it. And when I went to live with these younger college type husband and wife, freshly married, they were gymnastics. That's what they did. They did gymnastics, and So I started doing it with them, and I was really good. And so I got sent off to the Mississippi government the gymnastics training camp, and that's the first time I got drunk. I was about 11 years old, and I was there, and it was in the Mississippi Delta at Delta State University, and I was there with a whole bunch of other kids from 16 to, you know, 19, and they all wanted to go out and drink, so they stole the school bus, and about nine of us got on it, and of course I was the littlest one of all, and we went out to a camp on the Delta, up on the a reservoir overlooking the Mississippi River, and they started drinking beer, and we just drank beer, and I can remember it's almost like it happened yesterday. I remember the ease and comfort that came at once. I mean, it was just off the chain. All of a sudden, from being inside of here, 90% of my life I was in my mind, and things twirled around in there and everything. All of a sudden I was out there. I could talk. I could be a part of. You know, I was funny. They liked me. They all ingratiated me. And, you know, all of a sudden these older people were like wanting to hang out with me. And Bye Bye Miss American Pie was on the jukebox. I'll never forget it. Don McLean. And of course, you know, when we got caught stealing the school bus, we all got, you know, reprimanded, and I actually got sent back to the reform school. And this time when they let me out of there, I went back to my original mother and father. And my father had just burnt down our house, him and his girlfriend, and my mom decided that she wasn't going to take him back for the second time, I believe. And so we ended up moving to South Carolina, and it was just, it was like a culture shock. I'd spent most of my life on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, within walking distance of the beach, and there was always something to do. So I was in Carolina where there wasn't nothing to do. And I was probably there about 2-3 weeks, and I broke into a house and stole all their booze, and they had a bunch of guns. And I started trekking through the woods with 3 shotguns and a box of shells and a pillowcase full of booze, and I was drinking, and I came along a big opening, and it was a damn drive-in theater. And they had this big white screen up there, and I knew that I could hit that with that damn shotgun. And I was probably about 13 years old, and of course I went another trip to the training center where they were going to train me one more time. And actually they did. They I got well trained. I learned how to commit crimes and not go to jail every time. But I never could learn how to drink and not end up with ease and comfort. It came at once, every time. You know, I could spend 3 weeks in solitude, miserable, feeling like I was not part of anything, and I could take a drink, and all of a sudden I became part of the world and all it is. And so I started chasing that feeling because I wanted to be a part of. And I guess when I was about 17 years old, I went out drinking with a couple of my cousins, and I was in a bar, and somebody said something to me, and I've probably been on about a 3-day bender, and I pulled out a knife, and I just stuck the knife in the guy and just started cutting him up pretty good. And of course that took me back to the training center where they were going to retrain me. And I actually left this fella paralyzed in a wheelchair. And you know, I'm not very proud of that, but that is just part of what happened to me. And so I was, my grandfather was a real nice person who he died 2 years ago on me. And he actually put up my bond and got me out of jail. And they were going to try me as an adult. And I went to the grand jury, and they didn't hear the case. And my grandfather's property bond was reverted back to him, and I left the state of Mississippi. And I took with me my brother's wife and his daughter, and I went to Tennessee. And I commenced to having my new life with my new brother's wife, and who actually became my wife later after she got done being his wife. And throughout most of this, I'm drinking and drugging and carrying on and being a part of. And when I got to Tennessee, I fell in cahoots with some other people who really knew how to drink, and so I pretty much fit in pretty well, and I didn't catch a whole lot of slack there. And I was there for about 3 years working for the same company, and they transferred me to Georgia, and me and my little flower headed off to Georgia. And I've been very blessed in jobs throughout my life, and I was promoted to maintenance supervisor for a management company that they managed 17 commercial buildings here in Atlanta, and so I transferred over here as that, and I was doing real well, and my bride was doing real well. And I met up with some people who were entrepreneurs. They had their own business going. They were selling this marijuana stuff, and I thought that I could make a profit doing that, and so I got pretty heavily involved in it, and then I got heavily involved in another product they had, and it was cocaine. And I'm drinking all the time, and of course that allowed me to drink a lot more. And I've been here probably about 9 months when I had my first child with my flower, and it was a son. His name's Adam. He's a great child, a great kid. He's a great adult now. And I would take Adam and I would put him in the car seat, and I would drive around Atlanta so loaded, drunk, that I shouldn't have been on the road. And I wrecked several cars, and I would have him in his car seat, and I totaled several vehicles, and my wife couldn't put up with it and wouldn't any longer, and so she left me and went to Mississippi, and where she was from, actually, as same as me. And I followed her back over there, and I thought I could make it work there, and I quit doing everything. And you know how it is when you stop and you just get so anxious and so full of anxiety and you just want to just kill your damn self or anybody else, especially anybody else that walks around you more so than anything else. And I convinced her that I could be a good boy and we needed to come back to Georgia because I couldn't make a living in Mississippi. And we came back and I went to work for myself. And I got a contract with the United Way. And the United Way funds a whole lot of stuff. And I was a painting farm, and I had a very successful painting business with United Way. And but I once again fell off into thinking that I could be an entrepreneur, and I brought that down so hard on my family. And I actually was so ingrained and so I didn't think that I could survive without drinking and drugging. I didn't think that I could make it. I didn't want to do it, and I would wake up in the morning and I'd tell myself, I'm not going to act like this today. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to take another drink. And I would proceed to go out on my day truly meaning that I'm not going to do it. And by lunchtime, I would figure out a way that I could successfully have a couple of drinks, you know. And I would start heading home, and, you know, my son and my daughter and my wife would be home and be cooking up that good fried chicken and collard greens. And I would go by a sign, and the sign would say, 2-for-1 specials. And I would think to myself, I can have just the one. You know, I can stop in and get the one. I don't know if y'all experienced that. And I would go in and I'd have a one, and something would happen, and it would say, well, I can go on and get the next one, but I'll leave after it. And I meant it with all of my heart. I meant I was going to leave. I was going to go home. The grass was getting taller. The children wanted me. The wife was cooking the fried chicken. And all of a sudden, I'd look up. It'd be 11:30 at night. And I'd been drinking about 9 of them. And I'd been spent that other $20 I said I wasn't going to spend. And I save it. It don't matter now, because she's mad. Chicken's cold and she's mad. And I'd sit on that bar stool and couldn't get up. You ever been able to unass a bar stool? Many times I'd be sitting at the bar saying, okay, I'm going to leave after this one. And my ass would never follow my brain. It's wild how that works. And so I did that for probably a year or so, you know, every Friday, bam, bam. And, you know, it got to where she knew I wasn't coming home. So I started pulling a fast one on her. You know, I had a good bride. She was good. She would work all day, come home and cook victuals, good victuals. And she was good. She was a good woman. She loved me and made love to me right. The bad thing is that she could do all that Monday through Wednesday. Thursday, she couldn't cook. What was she at? Didn't even know how to kiss proper. Because I had to have a reason Friday coming up. You know, I didn't want to come home Sunday saying I just did it because. I had to come home with a reason. You didn't do right on Thursday, girl. I spent a couple of years treating her like that. And I didn't realize why. You know, I know that somewhere in me, I knew that there was something wrong, but I couldn't stop. And then there wasn't no more of chasing it or thinking about the ease and comfort. I had to have the ease and comfort all the time. I had to have it. It wasn't a choice thing. And, you know, after a few years of that, she got tired of me. But she hung in there with me for a long time. And I got to where I was staying up for, you know, 2, 3, 5 days in a row. Y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just drinking and doing it right. I mean, hard. And she's paying all the bills. Don't that sound like my mom? And she's paying all the bills, and I'm spending every dollar I can bring in. And I had 3 painting fans going out every day. I was catching big checks, but I wasn't bringing no money home. And I was home one day, and I didn't have nothing. It was probably like 2 days I'd been in the bed kicking the sheets, you know. And she came home, and the kids came home, and she came upstairs, and she was like, you know, you haven't participated in this family. You know, Adam's doing this, and Adam's doing that. And I got up off that bed, and I was so perturbed, and I had this anxiety in me that I just couldn't control. You know what I'm talking about? You know, that just, I'm ready to rip somebody's damn head off. So I went in there, and my 9-year-old was in there on his double bed, jumping up and down on the bed, and I went in, and I started whooping his ass like a grown man. Never forget it. I started beating him like a grown man. In the middle of it, I realized I'm my daddy. I am my daddy. This is what my daddy did to me. And I fell on back into my bedroom, and I pulled out, I had a 357, and I pulled it out, and I stuck it in my mouth. And my bride come busting through the door and grabbed it and said, I'm taking you to the hospital. She took me to Kennesaw Hospital. And And what I didn't know is that she had became a part of a 12-step program, a daughter program to alcohol, to Al-Anon, Co-Anon, and they told her everything to do, and she did it. She gave me all the money I wanted, all the freedom I wanted, and let me just go buck wild. And I drove myself straight into the ground. And she took me to the hospital, and I ended up in a little treatment center out in Kennesaw. And they had like a 7-day detox and a 31-day program. Of course, I didn't need all that. You know, I'll never forget. I was in there and they detoxed me, and you know, and hell, you could smoke, you could do just about anything you want to. It ain't like it is now. And the doctor looked over the counter and he said, "You want to stay?" And I said, "No, I don't need to stay. I'm just fine." He said, "You need to stay." And he convinced me to stay. And in that, I met some really fabulous people that came from the outside and gave meetings to, you know, 50-something patients. And it was unbelievable, you know. We were sitting in a room like this, and these guys would come in, they'd hug each other, and they would openly disclose who they were and the shit that they had done in their lives, and they laughed about it, and they laughed about being sober, and they laughed about wrecking cars, and they laughed about whooping children's asses, and, you know, they laughed about throwing away fortunes. And I had never been around anything like that. I'd never been around with anybody openly talking about their shit in public, you know? And I was enthralled by that. And I stayed the 31 days, and I left the treatment center, and I knew that I was, you know, I was all right. I'm going to stay sober. I want to be sober for the rest of my life. This is awesome. I mean, I know all y'all have experienced that. This is great shit. Sobriety is awesome, you know? So I went home and, you know, went back to I was running a stucco company then, and I went back, got on back to work, and everything's real good. Every night I'm going back to the treatment center, hanging out with the folks in the treatment center. You know, how y'all doing? Everything's great. I'm clean. I'm sober. I'm awesome. And about 30 days after that, I was probably, 60 days sober. I was coming home from work. It was a Friday, and I just stuck over the building down in LaGrange, Georgia. And I'm coming home, and I got a pocket full of money, and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, it's good in life, and everything's sweet. And somewhere in the back of my mind, something just jumped up and said, "Hey, you know that old fella lives right around the corner there?" I said, "Oh, you know, he don't live over there. That bootlegger ain't over there." "Oh, yeah, there he is." Y'all know what happened. My car just kind of turned that direction. I didn't even have my hand on the steering wheel. Run all over there. And of course, I came home 3 days later with nothing. And I remember it was a Saturday. And I'd go out and meet these fellows at this meeting at the detox center every Saturday and Sunday. I couldn't go. You know, I couldn't let nobody know I'd lost my 60 days, you know. And I pulled myself together, and I went over there on Sunday night, and I had never asked nobody to sponsor me. And I asked one of the fellas, he was a little prettier than me, and he was a lot younger than me, but he was a bunch soberer than I was. And I asked him if he'd sponsor me, and he said he would. And I said, he said, "What you been doing?" You know, I picked up the white chip, and he said, "What you been doing?" And I said, "Well, I've been coming out here to this treatment center." And he said, "Well, that's good, because you don't get nothing out here except for what them fellas over there got. And none of them got nothing." And he told me he'd sponsor me if I'd meet him at his house Monday afternoon after work. So I got up 5:00 in the morning and went to work. I got off at 6:00, went to his house, sat down at his house until he got home, went to a meeting till about 9:00, went and ate with him, got home about 11:00, and got up the next morning at 5:00. Went to work, got off, went to his house. I did that for about 6 months. And I met a bunch of people in AA and made a lot of friends. And the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is awesome because it's held me together many, many days. But wasn't nothing changing in my skull. Nothing up here was changing. And then he said, if you're really tired of being miserable, then let's open up the big book. And we opened up the big book, and he read it to me. But like I said, I'm illiterate, so he read it to me, and we got up to, we have to make a decision. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't know God. But I did know that that these people were sober, and they were doing the next right thing, and they were treating each other with dignity, and they had self-respect, and they had self-confidence, and I didn't have any of that. You know, and so I did. He wrote my fourth step for me, and it pretty much, you know, I got to be the judge and the jury in the first part of it, and that was good because I needed to be. And then he corrected me in my fifth step and told me the truth about myself, and that was good because it leveled my pride. You know, all those grandiose ideas that I thought, one day I'm going to be able to do this, or one day I'm going to do that. And I was thinking like that based off of a mind of an alcoholic that was headed straight down, and I'm thinking I'm going straight up. I was really confused about the truth, and he laid the truth on me, and it gave me a real even plane to work with. It allowed me a position to where I could actually do something in honesty. And it changed my whole viewpoint on me. And we went through the big book, and I don't know, the next 5 years were just a flash. It was an unbelievably great time in my life. And I guess about 5 years into that sobriety, my flower decided she didn't want to be my flower no more. I changed and she changed, and so she decided she wanted something else in her life. So we got a divorce, and I kind of lost track of myself. I started getting really ate up in some ego. Of course, I felt sorry for myself at first. I can't believe she wants to leave me now, you know. But she did, and so I went out and I hooked up with me a 22-year-old, and I was about 30, I don't know, two, something like that, 34s, somewhere in there. And it took about 2 years. I had about four sponsees, and I was going to about five meetings a week. So it took about 2 years where I was down to about one meeting a week, and I was working with about three sponsees. And then it took about another year. I pretty much pushed all them sponsees away and wasn't going to no meetings. And I think about the last 6 months of that that seventh year, it was me and God probably pushing. And then I pretty much decided I wasn't going to look his way. He was still there, but I sure wasn't. And about 2 months after my seventh year of sobriety, I picked up a drink. I decided I wanted to go dancing, and it wasn't long at all. I pulled everything down on my head, and when they say that if you go back, it's worse than when you left, it absolutely progresses in a major way. It wasn't long that I was in my first asylum. It didn't take long at all, and I came back pretty quick. I mean, you know, it took about 6 months for me to get Skid Row. You know, the 22-year-old left the apartment and took everything. You know, I'm sitting in the apartment. Of course, the eviction notice is getting stamped on the door, and I'm like, man, where did it all go? And, they locked me up for insanity. They should have been for trying to commit murder. But I came on back to AA, and I went to my sponsor, and I said, you know, what do I do? I want to be sober. I want everything back the way it was. I want it to be the way it was. And he says, it ain't never going to be the way it was. And well, that pissed me right on off. Yeah. And everybody that I knew, and I knew a bunch of people, you know, they'd pat me on the shoulder, they'd say, you know what to do. You've done it before. You know how to make it happen. I heard that shit for 7 years. 7 years. I was 7 years sober, and it was 7 years before I got sober again. Truly sober. I probably only drank, I don't know, 30 times in that 7 years. But, you know, with us, it don't take, you know, one drink, it might last, shit, 3 months. You know? you know what I'm talking about, don't you? you see where I'm hollering? You know, I threw everything away. And I remember, you know, my parents got a lot of guilt. By this time, my dad's sober. He done went to one of these treatment centers, these highfalutin treatment centers, where they just rain your ass dry. And of course, my mom and dad done been married for the third time. They done remarried. And they raising my middle brother's two children. And so I move on back into the house. I'm like, I'm coming home. They're like, why? I'm like, to help y'all. I'm going to help you remodel your house, Pops. And of course, they had so much guilt, you know, that they put up with my ass for a minute. And my dad, by this time, he'd been working offshore for about 30 years in the oil business. And he said, I'd gotten about all his house painted and everything. It took me about 6 months to paint outside the house. And my full bedroom. And, you know, he'd given me money the whole time. So he says, you need to go back to Atlanta where your children are. You know, you need to go back and take care of your responsibilities, son. And I knew I did. And face all the music. Y'all know the music? I said, well, I can't. I ain't got nothing. You know, they done took my truck. They done took my dog. They done took my house. That girl took all my furniture. And he said, well, I tell you what, I'm going to get you a car. So my old man pulls up, and my grandfather's in the car business, and somebody, my dad pulls up in a 72 Cadillac Eldorado. This thing stretched from here to the other side of the room. And it was red. Y'all know I needed that. It was in mint condition. My dad said, I'm going to sell this to you for $1,000. You can pay me over a year period. I'm like, that's good because I ain't got nothing. And he says, I'm going to give you $1,000, son. And I'm not going to give it to you until you're ready to leave. The car's in proper shape. The money's there. I said, all right. So he flies out to Texas, and I'm there. And I piddle around. I think I sold about, you know, probably $500 worth of his tools for $100. And I got a hold of a damn bottle of some real mean stuff. And my mama came home about 6 o'clock that evening, and she had the little envelope. You know the envelope? I don't know if y'all ever experienced an envelope from your parents where they pull out a little piece at a time on you. And you know, she had the envelope, and I said, Mama. Yeah, I have to have it. She said, son, what are you talking about? I got to have that money they left me. She said, Mark, you don't need that money. And of course, you know, I got the cars heated up, the damn glass tubes is hanging all out everywhere. And I'm like, yeah, I got to go. She said, son, she looked at me dead in my eyes, and she meant it with all of who she was. She said, if you take this money and you leave here tonight, don't ever come back. It's that tough love shit. I mean, it was all over me. I'm like, damn, you ain't never been like this, Mama. You know, you always had some guilt and shame. You let them fool treat you anyway. And she meant it with all of who she was. And guess what I did, y'all? Anybody tell me? I need that money, Mama. Give it to me. And she did. And I headed around town a few licks, and then I headed toward Georgia. And I posted out about Marietta for a minute. Well, I ended up living out in front of the Yellow Triangle. I lived out in front of Triangle. I had a van here in Georgia. I had an old brown van that I used to work out of. I had it. It was hid here in Georgia. It's about the only thing I had left. So I pulled it over to the parking lot of Triangle. That was my condominium. And I pulled that big old Eldorado up next to it. That was my work car. And I could not get sober, and everything in me wanted to. I did. I mean, I went to a bunch of damn treatment centers and spent 30 days and thought I had it. And I'd get out, and something, some little thing would happen in the back of my mind. It would say, "Oh, it's all right. Don't nobody know. You deserve a little break. You've been working hard at this thing." And I'd take a damn drink. And I couldn't control what happened next. But all that was in me, I thought I could control the next one, but I couldn't. It just kept slapping me around like a damn rag doll. You know, and I fooled around and went out to California with somebody. I had a friend of mine, a young lady. She said, "Hey, I'm going out to a conference in California. You want to go?" I'm like, "Yeah." Of course, by the time the day came, I had already took a drink. So I got on this long journey to California. It's about a 6-hour flight. You know, you fly over there. By the time I landed in California, I was experiencing that dis-ease and comfort that you get when everything ain't going your way. I was miserable. So, needless to say, she was the only abuse candidate close to me. And I'll never forget, I landed at LAX, and you know, 90% of the world, when they land at LAX, they either want to know where Hollywood is, or they want to know where Muscle Beach is. Y'all know what I wanted to know where it was? Anybody know where Compton is? How you get to Compton? You know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like going to a strange city and saying, "Where's Martin Luther King?" It wasn't long. I showed back up 3 days later with her rental car, with none of her money. And I went to jail in California. Don't like California. They did not want me to go home. But you know, it's every time that I drink, that's what happens to me. I end up doing something foolish. It gets me in trouble. But I always break out with the one mores. You know, I take the first one and I plan on that being the only one, but I always break out with the one mores. A physical allergy gets on me and I cannot stop it with all that's in me. I came back to Georgia and I managed to get 9 months of sobriety. Well, the crazy thing about that is about 2 months into that sobriety, I started seeing this young lady over at Triangle that I like. And so I sent the word out that she was going to be mine. And of course, you know, she was foolish enough to hook up with me, and me and her got married about a year later after 2 relapses that she put up with. But we were married for 8 years, but we were married for about 3 years. And I was staying sober, you know, 6, 9, you know, months at a time. You know, I would come, I would try, I would do everything I could do, but I couldn't really get sober. I couldn't surrender totally to the program. There was something in me that I just could not make the connection on. Well, we bought a house out in Marietta, and I'd been on a terrible 2-year hiatus with a horse. Me and this horse had a hell of a time together. And if you know what I'm talking about. And I was kicking the sheets for about 5 days, and I didn't think God nor country nor man was going to make this pain go away. I called her on the phone and I said, "I got to do something." I called the treatment center. And I did. I crawled out of the bed, and I got to the phone, and I called a treatment center and said, "Can I come there?" And they said, "Well, we don't have any beds." And they said, "We don't know when. It should be either late tonight or tomorrow." So I called her and I told her I needed some money. And of course, if there wasn't no money except for her money. And she had a very slender purse too. And but you know what she did? She gave me her ATM card. Her numbers. She told me what a card was. It was in her. She had it hid because I steal a purse in a minute. She had it hid, and she gave me the numbers to the ATM and said, "Go do what you need to do." And I went. I went downtown Atlanta and did what I needed to do. And I came back home, and I called the treatment center back and I said, "Y'all got one yet?" He said, "Nah, yeah, I'll call you." So I hung around there for a little while at my house. About 4 hours. I hooked up with it again, and I called again. I said, "You got anything?" He said, "No." I said, "Oh, man, you're going to have to do something quick because I'm running low." literally, I wanted to kill myself earlier in the day, and I was strictly just trying to maintain my mind. And about 5 o'clock that evening, I called him and I said, "You got anything?" He said, "Just come out here." He said, "Just come out here. Don't go to the hospital. You don't do nothing. Just come out here. Something's wrong with you. You're retarded." I said, "What are you?" And so I called my bride, and she came and got me, and she drove me out there, and I knew that something had happened to me. I woke up that morning, and I literally wanted to kill myself. And I had talked shit my whole life, and I would tell you anything. But literally, this time I meant that if something didn't change, that I was going to have to commit suicide because I could not live the way I felt, mentally or physically, either one. And they let me in. And I knew when I walked through those doors that I had had my last one. I knew it. There wasn't any doubt in my mind. And that's proved to be true up to this point. I stayed there for, I guess, probably 10 days. And they let me out. And I kept telling them, "I'm okay. You can let me go home." It was like right at Halloween, and I kept telling them, "I need to take my little boy out." By this time, I got my son Elvis, who's 9 years old now, and then he was like 3, and about 2 or 3, and I needed to take him trick or treating. But them folks knew better than I did. They said, "Oh, you need to stay." And they were right. I did. I needed to stay. But I came out with a new willingness. I had a new willingness. I was willing to do whatever. And when I was in there, I surveyed all of what had happened to me and how I went wrong, because I didn't know how to get sober. Getting sober is real simple. Come in. Turn yourself over to the care of the AA program. It never, ever fails. I have failed the AA program at times. I am not perfect by any means. But one thing is for sure, anytime I take an honest inventory, it works. Anytime that I surrender to you people and to the God that I have developed a relationship in this room, it works. I get the guidance I need in this room. Since I've been sober, my middle brother died of a heroin overdose. 2 years after that, my father died. And my father, when he died, I was truly so blessed because when my brother died, my father and I became a lot closer, And I actually had forgiven my father, and I'd done some step work with him as far as ninth step work, and to the tune of about a quarter of what I owed him. that we had developed a relationship like I never thought would ever be possible between me and my father, because I hated him. I hated him my whole life. You know, he was the one person that I outwardly knew I hated, because I blamed him for everything. He was the reason my life went the way it went. And, you know, God knows if he wasn't, you know, I was. I was a grown man. By this time, I was 40 years old, 39, something like that. I mean, I knew better, and I continued, you know, to live the way I live. But, you know, the thing is that we had a relationship. And, you know, when he got ready to die, he knew he was going to die. And he had an operation, is what happened, and he knew that it didn't go right. And he called me. I went over there for 2 weeks, and me and him hung out, went fishing and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, talked over a lot of things. And then when after he had the operation, I'd already came back home after the operation, and about a week later he called me and said, "Why don't you come over and visit me?" And I did, and I went home, and about 3 days later he died. And it, you know, just that quick, he just had an internal bleeding and died. Nobody knew it, but I think he did. And you know, and he did some nice step work with me, even though he wasn't in the program. But, you know, he absolutely talked to me about a lot of things that I didn't understand and didn't know about him, you know. And it gave me a lot of clarity. But you know, I've walked in this room with those kind of situations many times, and have been involved with so many people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that when something like that's happened to me, I've been able to open up and say, "Hey, I'm going through this," and those people can give me their experience and their inspiration, and, you know, and absolutely guide me through those difficult times, you know. My mother has Alzheimer's, and she's really developed a real bad Alzheimer's very young and very quick, right after my father's death. And, you know, there's a gentleman in this room that helped me immensely, just being here talking to me about it, you know. And that's what the fellowship is about. You know, that's where you get the fellowship, and you learn how to hug each other and how to share shit that you wouldn't never share. It would stay in your brain. You know, I spent most of my life in my head, talking to myself about other people, about other situations and other things. And now, you know, I find myself laying on the bed with nothing coming through my damn brain. Scary shit, ain't it? It's like this void, this empty thing, you know? But it's really pretty sweet. I can relax today, and I never thought I could do that. I learned how to relax and just be comfortable being me. And that's good, because I never was comfortable being me. I always wanted to be something different. And I drank and drugged, so you would like me to be something different. And I couldn't just be me. You know, when I came back into the fellowship this time, you know, I made a conscious decision to be me and let you know me and be who I am. But I also made a decision that I was going to do some things different this time, and that was I was going to grow. I was going to grow spiritually, and I was going to grow along the lines that you people have in front of me have already set the path. And it's not just as simple as not picking up a drink. That's awesome. There's nothing greater than not being imprisoned by a drink or a drug. Nothing better than that. But to have spiritual growth and spiritual peace of mind, become more than what I was. You know, that was my goal, and that's happened for me. You know, I have unbelievably great people in my life. I mean, more than half of this room are my friends and people that I know, and I mean, some of them I've known for way more years than I can even remember. I'm getting old, you know, but you know. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I started learning from the Big Book how to be the person that I wanted to be, not the person I thought I should be, but the person that I should be, you know, I didn't have a relationship with God. I didn't have an honest relationship with anybody on the planet. And today, I absolutely have an honest relationship with people. And in that, I found a relationship with God. And I really appreciate y'all being here and listening to me rant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow. But it's been a great 7 years. Okay, we're going to pass the basket one more time, just in case you came in late. We're doing everything we can to keep expenses, so we keep bringing you great speakers like tonight. And I'm going to ask anybody to give out tips. Richard, would you give out tips?
My name is Richard, and I'm an alcoholic. We have a tip system to mark our time and sobriety. First chip's a white chip for anybody who wants to come in, come back. Anyone else for a white chip? Second one is a silver chip for 30 days. Third one is a red chip for 90 days. Yellow for 6 months. Green for 9 months. Anyone else for a green chip? And a blue chip for a year, multiples thereof.
I'm Debbie, I'm an alcoholic. And this is Monica's 25th year. I just want to say that I've never had such good friends as I've had in AA. But Monica is probably the best friend I've ever had. When I call her with anything, she never reacts. She just responds. She thinks about everything and what's best for me. And she never gets mad at me. And everybody gets mad at me because I'm, you know, moody. But anyway, I love you so much and I'm so proud of you.
I'm Monica. I'm an alcoholic. This is 25 years, half my life. And I'll be quick. I just want to say that it has been an amazing ride. It has been the way that I work in the program. I can say that there were several years in there when I didn't work the program. I made really bad decisions. Working the program makes a huge difference. Sponsoring others, going to meetings. I try to go to 2 meetings a week. It's really basic. The steps are a way to live. It's great. Thanks.
Anyone else for a blue chip? Is it off of the white chip one more time? Congratulations on the chip we know.
Congratulations, Monica. Almost a year ago, you told your story, and that was really great. I'll never forget it. Okay, it's time for AA-related announcements. Would anybody like to share? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Mel Collins. Hey, Lisa. Died on Wednesday last week. She had a massive heart attack. So, and as a lot of you knew her, and I didn't have a way to get the phone number out, so I was super happy to get the phone number out, let you know about the funeral arrangements. And the cat had 7 years.
And the name again was?
Catherine Stewart.
Okay. Thank you. Yes,
on November the 7th, a Sunday, We'll have the old timers meeting here, and breakfast begins at 8:30, and the meeting is at 11. You don't have to be an old timer to come. Everybody's welcome, and we'd love to have a big crowd.
That's a Sunday.
Sunday,
November 7th. Yeah, we fill the room with that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Timmy, you want to say anything?
James.
Oh, James? Hey, sorry.
I'm James, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, James.
I'm on the Halloween dance on Saturday night, 9:30 to 12:30, and there will be a prize for the best costume. I think it's $50. So there's a lot of news, a lot of music, a lot of fun. Come and join us.
This Saturday? October
30th, immediately after the 12:12 meeting behind the curtain. Well, 30 minutes after. We've got a brand new DJ. Yeah.
I'm Tim, I'm an alcoholic. Two things. Another good friend of NAVA and really loved figure in the Atlanta recovery community, Don Williams. He passed away in an accident over the weekend. He is, you didn't know this, he fell and hurt himself Saturday and never regained consciousness. And he passed away. Don Williamson, a lot of people here knew him. Talked to Rita just before the meeting. They're going to have a memorial service at his church. We'll be posting it. But she wanted me to announce that all his AA friends are invited and encouraged to come to the memorial service. We'll have more information probably tomorrow, and I'll make sure it's posted here at NAVA. And I think it should be on the NAVA website, too, so I'm trying to put something on the NAVA website. And if we can get a few people to help us clean up and put the room together, that would really help me and Tim out, three or four of you guys to help us out. So, thanks.
Anybody else? Sounds good. Next week we've got NAVA has a Big Shot golf tournament. Have one every year.
Yeah,
if you're not canceled,
yeah.
What happens to the raffle?
Is it? They give the money back. We keep it.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, I guess that's it. Anybody else? I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Ever remind us place principles and four personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer. Monica, would you take us out, please?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
I'm here. Yeah, Peter. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Do you ever say
sometimes. Yes, she'll probably be here tomorrow.
Will you be here?